Welcome to the Swirl World Podcast, brought to you by theswirlworld.com. We're here to help you navigate the exciting world of interracial and intercultural relationships. Whether you've been involved in an interracial relationship for a long time, or you're new to the idea of swirling someone of another race or culture, this is the podcast for you. Here are your hosts, Michelle Matthews-Colloway and Adrian London Leach.
Hello, everybody. This is Michelle Matthews-Calloway, and welcome to another edition of the Swirl World Podcast, where we discuss all things interracial and intercultural. I'm your host, and we have a wonderful show planned. Today, our guest is Ginger Fire. She's an interracial romance author, and we're excited to talk to her. And she's on the line. How are you doing, Ginger?
I'm doing fantastic, Michelle. How's it going?
It is going well. I believe you are in the sunny state of Florida. Is that correct?
I am indeed. I'm actually in Jacksonville, Florida. It has not been as sunny as I wish it could be, but today was a perfect day. So, hey, I'm thankful for what I can get.
Okay. Well, I am coming to you from Lafayette, Louisiana.
Awesome. Awesome. I actually just came back from Mardi Gras there.
Oh, you did? New Orleans, is that
part of our... Yep, the one in New Orleans. I'm actually looking at my huge bag of beans right now.
Now, did you do what yep. they say you have to do to get those beads?
I didn't. I just told everybody it was my first Mardi Gras because it was. And they were like putting boas on me and throwing beads. And I mean, I will say, I'm very competitive anyway by nature. So I was like grabbing them out in front of little kids, and I was like really going all in to get these beads. I worked for these beads.
Well, you deserve them then. You haven't. I mean, it's like there's no party like Mardi Gras in New Orleans. I think everybody should put that on their bucket list and go at least one time in their life. Well, good. Now, I have been derelict. I did not. I did introduce you and say you were interracial romance author, but I didn't give you an opportunity to tell our listeners about yourself. So tell us a little bit about Ginger.
All right. Well, not much to tell. My little old me. I am a romance writer, but I actually work in the area of human resources. And I have been in human resources for about 12 years now, so I guess at this point I gotta love it. I am, this year I'm gonna be 40, yay!
Wow!
Would they say 40 is like the new 30, so I'm praying for that at least, you know,
yeah.
On my birthday this year. But I started writing a couple of years ago just because I was gearing up for 40. I said I'm not gonna cross over to 40 without being a writer, so. That's what I do. I'm now a writer part-time and also work full-time and just juggling life. But I think I'm like a lot of writers out there, you know, doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we're going to talk a little bit more about that. I know our listeners, that we have some who are interested in doing exactly what you're doing. So what better person to talk about what it's like than someone who's actually doing it? So I'm looking forward to learning more about becoming a writer.
Absolutely. I'm ready to share.
All right.
Yeah, and I mean, that's kind of, you know, just reading them. And I had always kind of been a writer, but never completed anything. I just never thought of an interracial couple as my characters. And that started bringing that into play in my own work. Like, okay, I can do that. You know, I want to make stories that do that. So, and feature those differences, which we, you know, are seeing right now in society anyway. Let me, you know, explore this. So
gotcha.
That's kind of how I got started.
Okay. So now, you are a swirler, is that correct?
Absolutely. And here's the thing about that. when I started reading, I was not a swirler. It was not until I started reading the interracial romance novels that I started seeing myself in that position as, okay, this is something I can do too.
Mm-hmm.
And just through the avenue of reading and kind of getting comfortable with that, I started doing like online dating and, you know, meeting guys from other, you know, races, ethnicities, things like that, and I became more comfortable with it. And I'm telling you right now, there are a boatload of guys out there that want to date and marry black women.
Mm-hmm.
And just as black women, just kind of, or any woman who's thinking of dating outside their race, go for it. There is someone out there for you, I promise.
So you've, I take it you've had some success with online interracial dating?
I have. I actually met my current boyfriend online.
Do you mind telling me which site you were on?
I was actually in one of the Facebook groups, one of the interracial Facebook groups.
Ah, okay.
Yes, and we just kind of started chatting from there and, you know, had a lot of things in common, and you really kind of progressed over about a year or so, just chatting back and forth, you know, and coming to see me and things like that. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's where we are. We're in a very good relationship, a very solid relationship. So it can happen, and you really just kind of have to open your horizons, so to speak. There are so many tools out there for you to meet people from other races and cultures, but you got to use them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, with anything else, you got to be savvy and smart about it.
Right. We talk a lot about vetting and making sure you vet properly and ask the right questions, pay attention to the signs, all those things.
Yes. Absolutely. The same thing your mama told you when you were going out, you know, when you were going out to meet people outside of the home. It's the same thing, you know, doubly so when you're online. But, you know, I got a good one, so I'm very pleased with the results.
Okay. Well, you know, we're going to have you come back on and if you don't mind, and talk a little more about the online experience. So many black women in particular seem to be, well, first of all, a lot of them seem to be afraid of interracial dating or just dating online. They seem to be afraid of venturing out in that way. And I know, I read a lot of comments and they say they're not comfortable doing that, et cetera. So we'll have to have you come back on and talk about that and your experiences.
Oh, absolutely. I would love to. I just think that it's so vital. And I know a lot, it can be kind of scary, but if you've never dated interracially, it's a great way to actually get to know someone.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, without any conditions or anything, without you having to put a whole lot of effort into it, it's just a great way to get to know someone first and get comfortable talking to that person or understanding your differences and similarities and, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. Being a person's friend first is key,
yeah.
If you ask me. And my boyfriend, he's like laying here like, yeah, you're right.
Well, when we get you back on the show, hopefully he'll come on too and he can maybe give his perspective.
He's blushing over here.
Well, we'll let you work on him.
I'm going to put his feet to the fire, too.
Yeah. We'll let you work on that end, and then hopefully by the time we have you come back, he'll be willing to at least say a few things, because we're always looking to get the male perspective as well. So.
Absolutely.
All right. Okay. Well, now you mentioned at the beginning of the show that you write erotica. Tell me a little bit about that, because there's romance and then there's erotica.
There is. You know, a lot of people mix those two and they just think that it's nothing but sex. And I like to kind of tell people, and the reason why I write erotica is because we all have passion in our lives. Anything that's going on in your bedroom is erotica. And so it's nothing to be ashamed of or scared of, but it's not for everybody, and I know that. But I just think that I write it because it adds more spice to my story. I primarily focus on the storyline, but also the spice needs to be there to grab that person's attention, to put the reader there. You know, in the bedroom or wherever that couple is. And so I love erotica. I'm a lover of it. I'm a lover of people touching and kissing. connecting physically. Mm-hmm. So to see erotica is just an extension of all of that. It's just kind of like a melting pot. You're putting all of that passion in one package, and it's arriving.
Yeah.
So that's why I write it. I don't think it's trashy. I don't think that there's anything that you can do with the human body that is going to be disgusting as long as it's consensual. And, you know, if it rocks your world, hey, go for it.
Well, you know, and let me ask you this now. When you first started, decided you wanted to write romance, did you immediately know you were going to do erotica, or did you evolve into that?
I think I kind of evolved into it. I didn't know right off that that's what I was doing. I just kind of fell into that. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of publishers, when I first started kind of reading, I noticed, and I was just probing around to see if I submitted something, what would the criteria be? And a lot of them wanted a hot opening scene. You know, mm-hmm. they wanted that erotica to be up front to kind of grab the reader's attention. And so in the back of my mind, as I was writing my stories, I'm kind of also thinking, okay, if I'm trying to get this published, what am I going to have to do in order to get this published? And having erotic scenes in a book was one of those things that, you know, a lot of publishers want that hot, steamy love thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think I just started throwing that in, spicing up my romance scenes a little bit more, being a little more graphic with them so that, you know, it could be also erotica. Mm-hmm. And I would say my regular writing, it got better. It got more exciting and passionate to me. Uh-huh. So I just stuck with it.
Well, now, tell me how or what thought processes go through your mind when you do an erotic scene. And I ask that because it's one thing for a person to be reading it, and
right.
then it's another entirely different thing for someone to be writing it. So,
right.
And we have a lot of budding authors out there who are interested in becoming authors, and they may want to get into erotica, and they may, you know, wonder if that's something they can do. So tell us a little bit about what goes through your mind and how you set your scenes up. I mean, you don't have to get really graphic or anything like that, but just as a writer, from a writer's standpoint.
I think you have to be motivated, so... Normally, I'm going to be looking at something sexual, and I will firmly say that I watch porn. I don't know about anybody else, but I love to watch porn. I'm not addicted to it, but it gets me where I need to be, especially when I'm ready to write a scene, because when you're writing, you need to make sure that the elbows are in the right place, the knees are in the right place. If she's laying down, you know, you can't go from... You know, she was on the bench and she was in the chair, or you put her up against the wall. All of it has to kind of come together. So watching adult films, to me, gets me my mindset in, okay, I can do this, I can do this, I can do that. But also, it puts me physically in that space.
Mm-hmm.
Music does the same thing. I mean, there are some very sexy songs. I love Lloyd. He has some very, very sexy songs. That put me where I need to be, you know, kind of a gritty roughness there. So those types of things put me in focus to do it. The thing about any type of writing, especially the love scene and you're doing erotica, is that it's very draining. A lot of people don't understand that, but it's draining to write those things.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to go into it really fresh, because by the end, you're going to be done. It's going to be all on the paper, and you're going to be like, okay, I'm going to get me a glass of tea, and I'm going to lay down somewhere.
So now, how long does it take you to write a scene, and about how many scenes would you say you have? How many, on average, do you have in your book?
I let the book kind of determine that for me. Now, like I said, I love the story. To me, the story should be the focus, and the erotica is kind of that cherry on top.
Mm-hmm.
So I normally will have at a minimum two. I try to get at least two in, but I'm not going to have them back to back to back. It has to make sense for me and for my story.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't just throw it in there just to, you know, say, hey, I'm going to put another erotic scene in there. I want that to be kind of a slow build, or if the couple's already a couple, I want it to be instrumental in moving that story forward. you know, you're going to get to know this couple through that erotic scene, or it's going to build to something else that's coming up. So I just really let the story ride that whole process.
Gotcha. So now, you know, you mentioned that you watch porn to kind of, or that may be one of the ways you get your mind mentally there so you can start writing a scene. And some people admittedly are turned off by erotica, and they consider it to be word porn. What do you say to people who have that mindset?
To me, like I said, anything that you do in your own bedroom is porn. Whether you want to say it or not, it's really semantic.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is porn. The fact that, you know, nobody's sitting there watching you is the only thing that makes what a person does in their own bedroom different from what they see on an adult film channel, is that somebody else is watching. But the acts are still the same. So if someone wants to, you know, kind of frown upon erotica, I say, you know, hey, to each his own, but you're being a bit hypocritical, you know, because if anything that you're going to do, the very act that got you on this earth, that got your mom pregnant, is the same thing that's happening in erotica. It's all porn.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you want to, you know, profess it as that or not. So when I write erotica, and there are some people who are turned off by a lot of sex in a story or graphic sex in a story, there are ways to kind of, you know, smooth it out and soften those sex scenes and make it into love stories. And that's fine. I mean, I can write that and I can write the erotica. It just really depends upon the character. And some people, I mean, I myself included, if there are too many sex scenes in a story, then I start to just kind of skip over the sex scenes just to get to the story.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to turn someone off just because there's too much sex in the story. That's why I try to make that story really kind of pop on its own and then add in the erotica. And I know a lot of people can be turned off by it, but, you know, if the story is found, I say, hey, stay with it, because that erotic scene is going to be, what, maybe 5-10 pages at the most,
mm-hmm.
and then you're back to your story. But that couple is going to be together at the end of the book no matter what. So all of that is built to a happily ever after, and I should focus on that.
Gotcha. Now, tell me a little bit, and I like the fact that you don't just cram a book with sex scenes, because I think sometimes people think, when they think erotica, that, oh, this is going to be a book filled with sex. So it's no plot. So it's wonderful that you don't write those kinds of books. You actually have a plot and it's going somewhere and there's a purpose for the scenes that you put in your book. So tell us a little bit about the writing process as far as how you, in a sense, conceive an idea for a book and move it forward. Tell us, kind of give us an idea from start to finish what you do.
Well, I have to have some type of visual motivation. And this is where my kind of obsessive compulsive disorder for Pinterest comes into play. I love Pinterest, and I find a lot of interracial couple pictures on Pinterest.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to that, I find just beautiful pictures of either beautiful women or gorgeous white men or gorgeous Arab men or whatever it may be. I find that on Pinterest and I say, okay, how can I get this hot white guy with this beautiful black woman,
mm-hmm.
you know, based on what's going on? And she has on a cowgirl hat and she's, you know, getting hay out of a barn. I'm thinking, okay, I can put these two together in a story. Now, why would she be in front of just a dilapidated house with a cowgirl hat on? And that kind of gets the wheels in my head turning, like, okay, you know, she got this house from her grandmother, and she's kind of down and out. She's got to rehabilitate this house, and she's the next-door neighbor, and, you know, so it just kind of keeps rolling from there. With me, it's definitely all visual. I have to have something that has brought me to, you know, these two people. How can I get these two people together?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really kind of my whole process is going from there, just starting off with a picture. Or I may be listening to NPR on the radio and some story comes up of unlikely people meeting, or something happens in the world, and I'm thinking, okay, if I as a Black woman, or my heroine as a Black woman, were in this position, what would she do? And who would the hero be? And, you know, those types of things really drive my creativity.
Mm-hmm. So do you use an outline or anything, or do you just kind of let it, it's organic and it just evolves as you go?
I used to just kind of be more organic, just start writing the story. But it takes me longer when I do that because I only have a loose direction in which to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
Now I actually do sit down and I use an outline, and I got this from some of my other writers who, you know, kind of shared their process with me. And the outline is amazing because you have to keep that story moving. And that gives you, okay, these are your mile markers. Something's got to happen at this point in the book. Something's got to happen at that point in the book. Something's got to happen here. And so that outline does keep me kind of on point and moving and makes that story easier to write.
That's
so
it.
Definitely an outline now is more critical to me than it was when I first started writing. And that's what I love about meeting other authors, is because you never know what the other writing processes are.
Mm-hmm.
Until you meet people who use them. I mean, I mentioned Aaliyah Burke earlier. She's the type of writer where she can write all of her stories.
Wow.
And that blew me away. I was like, whoa, you're handwriting these stories? She's like, yeah, I handwrite all my stories first. So, I mean, I'm not going to go there. Aaliyah, rock on. But I do learn things like that, just meeting other writers and hearing what their how they, you know, have mastered the craft. And hey, I pick a little bit from here, a little bit from there, that works with my schedule, that works with, you know, my creativity and all of those things, and makes my writing kind of smoother.
Okay. Well, now, since you mentioned about your schedule, how do you find the time? I know a lot of people want to be authors. They want to write, but they say, oh, I have a full-time job, and on the weekends I'm busy. Some people have kids or they're married. How do you find the time to write?
Honestly, Michelle, it is not easy. And I tell anybody this, you know, who wants to write, you have to have a burning desire to do it. Because it's just like saying, okay, I'm going to buy a gym membership. I'm going to start working out. I'm going to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
Consistency is key in anything. Consistency and passion is the only thing that's going to get you through. Because I right now, I'm a single parent, and, you know, I have, you know, the same things everybody else has, aging parents of my own, that I have family, siblings, a job, you know, all of those things. So to me, the most focused early in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I make a concerted effort to get up at 4:30 and write for an hour before my day even begins. Now, sometimes I hit that mark and sometimes I don't. I'm not even going to sit here and lie and tell you I get up every morning at 4:30 and write.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do not. But I do hit that mark at least 3 to 4 times a week.
That's awesome.
And, you know, that's what you have to have, some sort of consistency. And the weekends are good, and, you know, for writing as well. But you don't want to be in a situation where you feel guilty for taking time away from your kids or taking time away from your job or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to say, okay, this is my time right here. This is mommy's time to write. And mommy's going to write for an hour or 2 hours, and then it's going to be your turn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to spend nothing but focused time on you. So you have to kind of bargain it and make it work for whatever your schedule is. If it's late in the evening, you may have to stay up an hour later to get it in. Or you may have to, you know, sit at your desk and have lunch while you're writing.
Yeah.
But you got to get that time in and be consistent with it. That's the only way it's going to happen. And that's where the outline really comes in handy. Because if you know what you need to do for that particular day, what thing you need to focus on, you can get it done quicker.
Mm-hmm.
If you know ahead of time.
So do you do it by time, or do you do it? I know some people have a word count per day or per session. They want to do 1,000 words or 2,000 words. Do you go more so by the clock, like I'm just going to write an hour and whatever I get done in that hour, that's what I did that day?
I try to do it by scene, because sometimes when you're really kind of flowing in a scene, mm-hmm. the time goes by so quick.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to get as far into a scene as I possibly can to complete it. I'll know, okay, in this scene, the goal is X, Y, and Z. So I'll try to do that. If I know it's going to be a particularly emotional scene,
mm-hmm.
then I won't start it when I know I'm not going to have any time to finish it, like during my lunch at work. I'm not going to, you know, try to start a scene like that. Because I know once that hour is done, I don't have any wiggle room.
Yeah.
But I can do it late at night or early in the morning, you know,
mm-hmm.
and know, okay, if I do go over that time, my kid is still asleep, or, you know, my kid has already gone to bed, so I can stay up longer.
Gotcha. So do you give yourself a certain amount of time to actually finish a book?
Not unless I've committed to a publisher that I am going to write it. So sometimes you can do what's called writing challenges, and a publisher may say, hey, I'm going to be accepting St. Patrick's Day submissions, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And I want that the word count to be between 6,000 and 10,000 words, no more than that. And I need it by, you know, 3 weeks before St. Patrick's Day. At that point, if I commit to that, then I'm going to have to hit every mark. I'm going to have to be, you know, very committed on getting the story to them in time. Because they still have to do the edit. You got to get it back. Then you got to, you know, send it back to them with the rewrite. So you just never know how long the editing process is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
It is important when you make a promise or make a commitment to a publisher that you keep it, because you don't want to be one of those people that, you know, constantly breaking their word with it. Because then they won't come to you and say, hey, would you like to submit to us?
Gotcha.
So I try to limit that just because I know I do have a lot going on in my life, mm-hmm. and I do kind of like to be in a position where I have some control over when this book gets put out. So nobody's being let down, my reputation is still intact, and all those things. I haven't let anyone down by making a commitment that I couldn't keep.
Gotcha. So now tell me about, you know, again, I'm thinking about our listeners and people who maybe want to break into publishing. Were your first book self-published? How did you even get to the point where you have publishers making requests of you?
Well, basically, the way I kind of started, it was really a fluke. I actually, about 2 years ago, was going to a meet and greet for Beautiful Trouble Publishing, and it was really just more, I was going as a reader.
Mm-hmm.
I knew there were going to be authors there that I really loved and had read books by, and I figured, okay, I'm going to meet these people, and then I'll just kind of ask them a couple of questions to see how I can further my own writing and get my writing going professionally. So I went there, and I actually met quite a few groups of the authors that I loved, and I was kind of like starstruck. Like, wow, you know, I get a chance to meet these wonderful, awesome women, and I love their work so much. But I spoke with one of my favorite writers. Her name is Yvette Hines, and we just kind of connected, and she said, hey, listen, you know, if you have any questions, feel free, reach out to me on Facebook or through email, and I'll be more than happy to answer any questions that you might have. And so later on, I kind of got the nerve to, you know, ask her some questions about writing. And one of her main things was, you've got to finish your story. And because up until that point, I had a lot of half-written stories. Mm-hmm. I hadn't completed any. And so her thing was, you know, you can't do anything until you complete your story. Then you can really kind of submit it and see where you are. So the publisher will be very candid with you on where you are in your writing process. If you're good, they're going to tell you you're good. If you need work, they're going to tell you you need work. If you can't write it, I guarantee you, no, we're not going to publish it either. You can't write. Go back to the drawing board. And that's kind of scary in mm-hmm. some respect.
Yeah.
So I kind of sat on that information from April all the way into July. And I had the story that I had half written, and I was like, no, I'm going to, before my birthday in August, I'm going to finish this story, because I've been doing this half writing stuff for years and years and years. And if somebody's going to tell me, I think I'd rather know it now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm tired of pretending. So I finished that book and I submitted it to Beautiful Trouble Publishing, because I had also met both of the owners of that publishing house, Jeannie and JF, and they were like, hey, you know, if you want to submit something, go ahead and submit it. We'll take a look at it. So that was my green light. I finished the story and I submitted it to them maybe about 3 weeks before my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And they came back to me and said, okay, we like it. We're going to publish it.
Wow.
And when I say I could have, my jaw hit the floor, I was like, really? You know, thank God for email, because they didn't get the original reaction, which was me, you know, running around my house screaming like a lunatic. I mean, honestly, I couldn't believe it. And even after I signed the contract, I didn't tell anybody about it for a week, because I kept thinking they were going to come back to me and say, oh, yeah, you know, we decided not to do it. I kept thinking, you know, they're going to take it back and say, no, we decided not to. But, you know, after a week, I felt safe in telling people, you know, hey, I got, you know, they're going to publish my book. And that's when it really became real to me. And I really started reading other publishers and things like that just through those two ladies. They are very encouraging. They were always like, you know, hey, branch out. Don't just, you know, publish with us. Mm-hmm. Do a self-published book. See how you like it. And try to publish with another publishing house as well. You know, just kind of, you know, work your connections. See what you like. You got to find what you like. And Yvette Hines also gave me that great advice. She has published with a lot of other publishers. She's also self-published, and she was a big advocate of just saying, hey, you never know. So I reached out to different publishers just through Beautiful Trouble Publishing, and they were like, hey, you know, if you want to submit something, go ahead and submit it, you know. And so now I do get those publishers that say, hey, you know, we got this coming up. If you have a story, go ahead and submit it to us. And that's a great position to be in.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And, you know, you mentioned, Ginger, that when you first went to that conference and talked with that author, that you kind of sat on her words for about 3 months before you decided to stick your toe in the water. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of women get stuck, not just with writing, but something they want to do. You know, I think about launching this podcast. It's a leap of faith. It's just something you have to just get out there and do.
That is so true. Change is difficult. And when you're talking about putting yourself out there, you're putting yourself out there with the possibility that there's going to be some rejection.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be able to take that. And especially with writing, you know, or like you said, with anything, there is always that opportunity where it might not go well.
Yeah.
But when you have been doing something for decades, and you feel in your soul that this is what you were supposed to do, you have no choice but to put that out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you would be doing yourself a horrible disservice not to try it at least. And with me, I think it was a bit of fear of success as well.
Ah.
Because that is, and I know that sounds crazy. Mm-hmm. I know it sounds crazy. But I think it's a bit of fear of succeeding.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, once I succeed, where do I go from there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is that success going to look like? You know, what if this thing gets too out of control for me to handle?
Yeah.
You know? So you really have to just say, okay, you know what? Come what may.
Mm-hmm.
If I succeed, then if I was meant to succeed, I can handle it. I have people in my corner that will help me handle it. And just kind of do it anyway.
Yeah.
Let's see.
And you know, that's an incredible point to say, you know, because we sometimes people focus on the fear of failure, or you hear a lot about the fear of failure. But you're right, the fear of success is just as real, maybe if not even more, because I think people get stuck in comfort zones. It's like, if I never write, or if I never try to start a business, or if I never start a podcast, then at least my life is like it is now.
Right. You can always kind of say, oh, I know I would be a success if I did do it. I mean, I have plenty of people who have who read those handwritten stories and said, oh, girl, you can write. I just, oh, my goodness, this writing is so great. And all of those people were my friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something totally different for someone to spend their hard-earned money on that book and come to you and say, that was a good story.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is something totally different than your mama and them saying, hey, baby, you are the best writer I have ever read.
Right.
And it means so much more because those people don't know you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have a dog in this fight. They are just consumers that like your product.
Exactly.
So, you know, you have to put it out there. The win or lose, good or bad, you'll at least know where you are.
That's true. That's true. And my grandmother used to have this saying, nothing beats a failure but a try. So
right.
You can't beat failure unless you try. You have to do it.
That is right. That is right. You will never know unless you try.
Wow. So how many books have you published to date?
I have 6 right now, and my 7th is actually coming out on June 5th. My 7th book. So I'm on a roll now.
Wow. So now what are you averaging? How many per year does that make that you're writing?
Let's see. So that'll put me at least 3 a year.
That's incredible.
About 3 a year now. And that's good. I write primarily short stories. The one that's coming out June 5th is actually my longest story to date. It's about 40,000 words, so it took me a while to get that story out, and I have been trying to do stories around holidays because it's just kind of easier to, you know, put out, but mm-hmm. You have those time constraints of, okay, it's a holiday, so it's not moving.
Right.
So that deadline is final. But this book coming out June 5th is my first Gator Shifter story. It is a erotic romance, and it's paranormal.
Ah.
And which is, I've done a paranormal before, but this is a little different. I got way, 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 way outside of the box on it.
Wow.
I'm very, very pleased and can't wait for that one to come out. And this publisher that I'm publishing with, Talisman Publishing, is a different publisher. A lot bigger, and it's more variety. It's not just interracial romance or anything like that. It's just a publisher that publishes everything.
Mm-hmm.
So this is my kind of first foray into that type of arena, and I'm very pleased to have that experience now.
So now what's this? And so now is this is an interracial paranormal mm-hmm. novel?
It is. The hero, he is regular Gator, white guy from the Bayou, and he's Cajun. Yay!
All right! That's you dipping into my area now, talking about Cajuns and the Bayou.
I might actually like this story. It's kind of, and I made this whole kind of world up. But it is set in Louisiana, primarily in New Orleans, but he's kind of the ruler of the whole Lafayette area.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. So that's where I am. So I might need to look around when I step outside the door.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Oh, yes, ma'am. And my heroine, her people are really from the whole Baton Rouge. She's Creole.
Uh-huh.
And they're kind of the Baton Rouge. Her dad is the ruler of that pod. Is what we call it, and so they're kind of going to meet, and she doesn't know she's a Gator Shifter, and he is her mate, and he had to go and find her because she was actually abducted from the Bayou, and so it's a whole long story about her kind of coming into her own as a Gator Shifter, him meeting his mate because he's kind of rounding up on his 30th Mardi Gras, the 30th Bayou Moon, where if he's not mated, then he's going to have to step down.
Oh, wow.
So he's kind of in a time crunch. I got to get her to know, hey, we're meant to be. But also, I got, you know, my enemies at the door here waiting for me to, you know, get booted out of here. So I think you would enjoy it. I think a lot of people would like it. If you like the paranormal and you like the Bayou and the Kingston and all of those things, you'll love the story.
Oh, for sure. So now when you say gator shifter, they shift into alligators? Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, that is absolutely correct. And they are like regular human beings, but they have that ability to shift into alligators. And it's been something that has been going on for hundreds and hundreds of years. And to present day, you know, that's what they are. They are a whole other class of superhumans.
Oh, okay. And what's the title? What's the name of the book?
It's called Under the Bayou Moon. And again, that's going to be coming out on June 5th.
Okay,
Under the Bayou Moon.
All right. I'm definitely looking forward to that. And now tell our listeners where they can find you. If they want to get some of your other works or certainly purchase your books, I would hope. How would they find you?
Primarily, I always tell people, go to my website. Because the books are out there. The links to the different places where they're sold are out there. And that's www.gingerfire.com. And ginger is spelled GYNGER and fire FYER. I played with a little bit there. Mm-hmm. But www.gingerfire.com. And from there, you can see all my books. I have links to buy them on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the actual publisher, if you want to go to the publisher as well. And I also have my Twitter account on there, my Facebook account. So that's kind of a one-stop shop.
Gotcha.
If you want to find me, my autograph page, all of that is on my website. So just go there and you can find anything you want about me.
So now, do you attend any conferences? Are you going to be at any author conferences? What if somebody wants to actually meet you?
Oh, absolutely. I definitely do the Beautiful Trouble Publishing Conference each year just because that's where I kind of got my start at, and I love those ladies there, and I still publish with them. And they're going to be having a meet and greet this in Austin, Texas. So I don't know who's out there in Texas, but definitely I'm going to be there. It's going to be Saturday, June 21st, mm-hmm. at the Hyatt Regency in Austin, Texas. So they can come out and meet me there. They can go to the BeautifulTroublePublishing.com website and buy their tickets for that. So that's so much, that's what I have right now for this year, just going to Austin, and I'll, you know, meet a lot of people there, especially the ones that I talk to on Facebook. I'm on Facebook an awful lot, mm-hmm. and you see I post all of my swirl couples on there. It's inspiration for everybody who wants to, you know, who's thinking about swirling. I post those pictures there, kind of, you know, hey, keep it going.
Yeah, because you have, you do, a swirl couple of the day or something like that.
Yep, I do the cute couple of the day, and it's always an interracial black woman, you know, either white guy or Asian or, you know, whoever I find, but definitely an interracial couple that I try to promote. I definitely want to promote that.
Okay, all right. Well, I certainly appreciate you being on the show today, and it's been extremely informative, and I'm just so pleased to be able to talk to you and I'm thinking about going to that conference, so I'll get a chance to meet you.
That would be awesome. I would love that. And it's definitely been my pleasure. I wish you all the best on your show. And hopefully I can, you know, come on when you have that interracial online dating show. I would love to, you know, add my 2 cents.
For sure.
But definitely congratulations on your show.
Thank you so much, Ginger. I really appreciate it. And we definitely are going to have you come back because we do want you to talk about your swirling life and online and dating and the whole nine, and just kind of tell our listeners your story as far as that aspect of your life.
Awesome. Sounds good to me.
All right. Well, thank you. That's our show for today.
Thank you for joining the Swirl World broadcast brought to you by theswirlworld.com. Please take a minute to visit our website and join our growing community by subscribing. You can also visit The Swirl World on Facebook. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, remember, life is better. In The Swirl World, keep swirling.
Endless passion for interracial love.
Find us on Facebook.
Facebook.com / The Swirl World.
The Swirl World. Swirling as it should be.